That's right. I mean, and you wouldn't know it if you looked at any of their social media accounts, because they paint themselves to be, you know, oh so green and oh so responsible around climate, and they're making this and that commitment. But the truth is, you know, these banks did not need Donald Trump's help to sabotage the Paris Climate Accord. Since it was signed, they have provided well over $1 trillion in underwriting and in lending to the fossil fuel industry that's building out and expanding new fossil fuel infrastructure. So it's, you know, how are they responding? They're putting their money into keeping this industry alive. And it's not just alive in the present or in the near-term future. Every one of these new fossil fuel infrastructure projects that gets built locks us in to decades of the status quo and a dirty energy economy. So it's a big deal.
Yeah, I will note earlier this week, I got a email from Public Citizen asking groups in New York to sign on to their effort to get the Department of Financial Services in New York to put a little bit more stringent regulations or monitoring on the banks in terms of its relationship to finance and fossil fuels. I believe it's probably the first state really looking at that. But you know, besides, you know, the day of action, and I guess there's almost 100 or more events taking place in the United States. You know, what will be sort of the follow-up after next Tuesday?
Yeah, and Mark, I'm glad that you mentioned the divestment movement, because in some ways it's a similar playbook, right? We have been working at Third Act and with our partner organizations for about a year now to, you know, make sure that folks increasingly know about the connections between their cash and carbon. And that's important, but we're not foolish enough to think that one person, you know, closing their account with JPMorgan Chase at a time is going to do anything to hurt the bank's bottom line. And so the next phase of all of this is escalating to organizing our institutions with much larger accounts to make commitments to be moving away from these banks as well. And forces combined, we know that you know, ultimately has the power to get their attention, not only because the accounts are much bigger, but because we need to just be making so much more noise, and efforts to, you know, revoke the social license of these banks to essentially work as external arms of the fossil fuel industry. So we'll be doing a lot of escalation into much larger institutions with much larger accounts.
Well, we have about 2 minutes left. I mean, actually, what you just pointed out makes me think about, hey, where does New York City, where does New York State put their money in? But, you know, both what can individuals perhaps do in terms of their own financial investments? And, you know, how can people, you know, get more information about what Third Act is doing and also about the role of banks and other financial institutions in fossil fuels in 90 seconds?
Great. Yeah. I mean, folks are welcome to visit our website, which is thirdact.org. We have loads of resources at our site about how to find out, you know, which banks are not investing in the fossil fuel industry and credit cards too. So that's a good place to start. A perfect place to start is to come on out to one of our actions. You mentioned a few moments ago that there's going to be over 100 actions next Tuesday on the 21st, all around the country. You know, one of the best things you can do as an individual is to be a little bit less of an individual. So come on out and join us. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be a lot of fun. It should be a really powerful day.
Well, in Albany, it's at Maiden Lane and Broadway, the walkway over there to the Aquinum Reserve. And it's at noon. And we're going to have a bunch of speakers, a lot of people from the faith community. I think it's Mountains and Rivers Green Faith, but dozens and dozens of communities, some frontline speakers, Mert Simpson, some youth speakers, be some music. I think some of the members of the Red Brigade are going to be there. And that will be at noon. And we've been talking with Vanessa Arcara, who is the president and co-founder of Third Act. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
This is Otis M. Carson. I'm from NYC, and you're listening to WGXC Accra Hudson Catskill.
Who listens to radio? That go where you go medium called radio. That's with you every night through the long commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady. Oh, who listens to radio? No matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall. Who listens to radio? Only 150 million. 150 million.
Waif Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Waif Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit mohican.com.
I was just going to lie down for 5 minutes, take a little nap.
Yeah, a regular Rip Van Winkle.
Who?
Another guy who took a little nap, woke up, and didn't know where he was.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra, Catskill, and Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I am 21 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Fatia. I'm 9 years old, and I'm also from Hudson.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate,
and bookish things. And we're often joined by our friends Claire and Georgia. They have not joined us yet today, so we'll see. But I'm really happy to get to talk with Fatia and Amelia about some books, because that's what we love to do on the radio and in general in real life too. Mm-hmm. Not that radio is not real life. This is part of my life.
Yeah.
And to our listeners listening out there, it is part of their life. So hello, listeners.
Hello, listeners.
We're very happy to be a part of your life today. Thank you for sharing your life with us. So I'd love to hear from one of you about something you've been reading or writing, or something bookish. Who wants to go first? How about Fatia? We don't go with Fatia first that often. What do you have to share today, Fatia?
I was trying to make a book, but it's not ready yet. So I'm going to share a poem.
Great.
It's called Five Little Pumpkins Sitting on a Gate. The first one said, "Oh my, it's getting late." The second one said, "There are riches in the air." The third one said, "But I don't care." The fourth one said, "I'm ready for some fun." The fifth one said, "Let's run and run and run." Woo, went the wind, and out went the lights, and the five little pumpkins rolled out of sight. It's a really short one, but I like it because it has a lot of rhymes in it, and I like rhymes.
Yeah, it has a cute little rhyming to it. Feels very fun. Feels very Halloween-y.
Yeah.
With the witches, especially. Because you can have pumpkins at different times of year. And I guess you can have witches too. Whatever. It's an all-year poem. But it does feel like a special Halloween rhyme.
Yeah.
Do you know what I love about pumpkins? I love the seeds. They're my favorite part.
Yeah, I had a pumpkin seeds one time. in first grade, but I didn't like pumpkin seeds.
No.
Yeah.
I think they're good when they're like toasted up and a little salt on them.
Yeah. I like watermelon seeds more.
Really? Do you eat them?
Sometimes.
Really? Yeah. I've never eaten a pumpkin seed on purpose.
I like when I eat watermelons, like there's like some seeds there, and when my mom's not looking, I just like eat them.
I made some squash soup recently, and I saved the seeds because I was going to toast them up, make them nice and tasty. Then you can put them on the soup or you can just eat them. But then I put them in a little Tupperware while I was waiting to, like, while I was finishing up. And then I forgot about them. And then about a week later, I found them and I opened it up and they had sprouted in the little Tupperware. So I have, and I still have it, like a couple weeks later, a little Tupperware filled with little sprouts. I'm trying to decide if I should plant them.
Yeah, like at school, like we're like planting, but not in the soil. It's not in the soil. It's like, I'm not sure if it's flowers or fruit, but like we're learning about the flowers and fruit in the stem. So there's a Ziploc bag we put the seed in, and we had no water, just sunlight or darkness, and it didn't grow. And some were wet, but mine was like darkness and dry. And then a few days later, we opened them, and mine did not grow yet, so I couldn't really plant it too. It wasn't planted that well, so we put some like water in it. I put a lot of water in mine because I was like forcing it to grow.
Yeah, it's hard to grow things and it's dry. I need some water and light.
Yeah,
that's fun though. Fun little experiment. It's fun growing things from seed. To connect this all back to like bookish things, the library has a seed library, so you can come in and pick up seeds for free to take home and grow. And then if you so choose, you can save seeds at the end of the season and bring them back and donate them back to the library to then share with somebody else. But you don't have to. It's not like borrowing a book where you have to bring it back by a certain date or anything. But we have seeds that you can take and grow stuff. And then a lot of people donate seeds too. So I don't know, sometimes like I don't have that big of a garden. So if I buy a packet of seeds, especially something big like a pumpkin, I can't really grow more than one pumpkin in my yard, but you don't usually buy one seed. So I have all these extra seeds and then I can donate them to the library so that other people can take them and grow their pumpkins.
Yeah.
But I'm just making up pumpkins because that was your poem. I've never actually grown a pumpkin.
Me neither. I really want to grow a pumpkin because I was born in October, and October is just Halloween, and Halloween has pumpkins, and pumpkins, I want to grow them.
Maybe you should this year.
Yeah, I'm hoping to grow them maybe in the spring so it can start sprouting quickly.
Mm-hmm. That'd be cool.
Or autumn.
Yeah, I forget when you're supposed to plant pumpkin seeds, probably before the autumn, because it needs to get nice and big by the fall.
I'm going to maybe, I don't know which season to pick, but it's probably going to be like 5 days before autumn, maybe.
What I would do is look up pumpkins, New York State, when to plant them, and then find out from that when you should plant it.
Yeah. And
do some research.
I wonder if you can make pumpkin cookies, because I made cookies today.
I'm sure you can, because you can make like pumpkin bread and pumpkin muffins. Why not?
You can?
Probably.
I thought you could only make pumpkin muffins. That's all.
I bet there's a recipe out there for pumpkin cookies, even if it just has a little bit of pumpkin in it. I bet there is one. Seems like something you could do.
Yeah.
Some more research we could do. Look up a pumpkin recipe, pumpkin cookie recipe. But anyways, thank you so much for sharing that poem. That was really fun. Like that one. Amelia, what did you want to share today?
Hello. I've had a lot of time to read recently because it's been snowy, and I have been trying to get back into Wings of Fire because I kind of fell off it for a little while, and I feel like I'm betraying my like child self because I love those books so much. Luckily, I've discovered that the graphic novels for that series are still coming out, and they've actually gone beyond just the first five books and are going into the next five books, which to me implies that they're going to keep making them. And I find that it's easier for me to catch up with a story through the graphic novels than it is to sit down and read the entire book again. Right now, they have gone up to the sixth book, which is Moon Rising, which now has a graphic novel. I only have up to the fourth graphic novel, but I've been rereading them, and it's always so cool to look at the graphic novels and compare it to how you imagined the setting in your head, especially when it's like a normal novel being translated to a graphic novel format. I think it's very fun.
How similar or different is it from how you imagined it at least the way that they portray it in that graphic novel?
It's the first one is the one that like I the first one is the one that I'm that's most similar to what I imagine in my head for the very first book. I don't remember what it's called. I just know it's the very first book. The one that's most different is the third book, because there's like a species of dragon in Wings of Fire called Rain Wings, and they're multicolored and they can camouflage. They're kind of like chameleons, and the art in that graphic novel is so pretty and vibrant and colorful that it just kind of blew whatever I imagined in my head out of the water. It's so pretty, because that's the book that takes place in the Rainwing Kingdom, so it's just a bunch of multicolored dragons and it's really pretty. That one's the most different to what I've imagined, I think.
Do you like your imagining of it or the graphic novel world better?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not like the kind of person that reads a graphic novel and then I feel like, well, you know, how I imagined it was like ruined, or how I imagined how a character looks is ruined. I can appreciate both, I think. I mean, in the end, the art in the graphic novel is just that illustrator's interpretation of the world too. So like, that's how I see it anyway.
What I find interesting for me is if I read a novel where there isn't a visual to think about what the character looks like, and I make up a visual in my head, if I see a movie version of it, I often, like if I continue reading in a series, I start thinking of them as the actors from the movie rather than how I originally imagined them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Whereas
I feel like if it's a graphic novel that gets changed or gets adapted as a movie, I can still separate those two mediums. So for instance, like Harry Potter, once I saw the movies, I immediately started picturing all the characters as the actors from the movies. Whereas like with Sweet Tooth, that's a comic series that's been adapted to a Netflix series. This just stylistically, they look so different that I still picture both depending on which medium. You know, I don't know if I'm explaining it well, but I guess because I don't have to imagine the visuals.
Yeah, I get that.
I don't know. That's cool that you're getting back into Wings of Fire, your old stomping grounds.
Yeah. Oh, I loved those books so much.
Seems like you still do.
I do. I still do. I love dragons. I have a soft spot for dragons. I think dragons are super, super cool.
They are. Very true. Cool. Well, I can talk about a book that I've been reading. I haven't finished it yet, but I recently started listening to the audiobook for a book called On Air with Zoe Washington by Janae Marks. And it's a sequel to a book that I really loved called From the Desk of Zoe Washington. And so it's going to be hard to talk about the sequel without spoiling the first one a little bit. But I think when you read the first one, you kind of assume on some level how it's going to end. So I don't feel like I'm spoiling too much. But From the Desk of Zoe Washington is about a 12-year-old named Zoe who lives with her mom and her stepfather. And she doesn't really know her birth father. And he's been in prison for most of her life. And so she thinks of her stepdad as her dad and doesn't have a connection with her birth father. And one day she gets a letter in the mail that arrives from the prison from her father, Marcus, her birth father. And in it, actually, I can't remember if it's in that letter or not, but she ends up starting a correspondence with him. And along the way, she learns that he maintains that he's innocent of the crime that he was put away for. She also finds out that there were other letters that he had sent over the years. He had tried to stay in touch with her, but her mother had been concerned about them having a relationship, and so had hidden them away. And so Zoe goes on a mission to prove her dad's innocence and help set him free. And so the spoiler part is that she is successful and her father gets released. So the new book is On Air with Zoe Washington, and it takes place 2 years later. And she's formed a relationship with her birth father, and they work together at a bakery because she's an avid baker. And she finds out that he wants to open a restaurant someday, that's his dream. And she wants to be his partner in the restaurant. And she is determined to help make it happen. But what the book covers a lot about is the struggles that people have with reentry. So people who are released from prison have a lot of challenges when they try to enter the world again and start their life, either pick up where they left off or start afresh. And in his case, he was innocent. So you'd think that coming out that he would be embraced and that things would be easy, but he still has gaps in his resume and he doesn't have a credit history. And so it makes it challenging for him to move forward. And so as part of Zoe's attempt to help him achieve his dream of being able to open a restaurant, she decides that it would be good to help publicize the challenges of people reentering society from prison, and decides to start a podcast to interview people about their experiences. And so at the point I'm at in the book, she's just decided that she's going to do this podcast. So I still have to see if she'll be successful and what challenges she has and what successes she has and where it all leads. But I really like her character a lot. I like both of these books a lot so far. I feel like they do a good job of balancing many different things. Like there's her interest in becoming a baker. There's her relationship with her mom and her stepdad and her birth dad. There's relationships with friends. In this one, two of her friends have started crushing on each other, and she's a little worried about what will happen if they start dating. Will that make a weird dynamic in their friendship? So I feel like it covers a lot of different ground. Feels like a real, real person, a real character. It's not just one dimensional. So I really like that. I'm not sure if there's going to be another book, but I would certainly read more. But yeah, so the latest one is On Air with Zoe Washington. Just came out last month. And this is a middle grade novel. So that's probably good for 8 to 12, 8 to 13 or 14. And then the first book was From the Desk of Zoe Washington. That came out back in 2021. So highly suggested. Definitely check those out.
Sounds really interesting.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far. I think I'm about halfway through. So still a ways to go, but glad I finally got around to reading it. It was on my to-read list as soon as I heard that it was coming out, because I really liked the first book. It just took me a while to get to it because I had other things to read too.
Mm-hmm. There's always more to read.
Yeah. Actually, what happened was I was looking on the Libby app, which is how you can borrow books through the library system that are ebooks or e-audiobooks. It's the app Libby. And I was looking through there and saw that somebody had purchased the audiobook. And it was available to borrow. So I was like, okay, it's time.
Audiobooks are so nice.
I love audiobooks. And this one's actually read by Bonnie Turpin, who is a reader that I really enjoy. She's read a lot of stories that I've liked over the years. So I was also excited to see that she was the reader for that. Before we go, I can mention a couple books coming out that people might be interested in checking out. I'll start with The Girl from Earth's End by Tara Dehrman. And that just came out this week on Tuesday, March 14th. And here is the description. Gifted gardener Henna embarks from her island home to search for the plant that might save her papa's life in this vibrant story of love, grief, and growth. 12-year-old Henna loves living with her two papas and cultivating her beloved plants on the tiny island of Earth's End, until Papa Niall grows seriously ill. Now Henna is determined to find a legendary, long-extinct plant with miraculous healing powers, even though the search means journeying all the way to St. Basil's Conservatory, a botanical boarding school rumored to house seeds of every plant ever grown. At St. Basil's, Henna is surrounded not only by incredible plants, but also, for the first time, other kids, including her new roommates. Wisecracking genderfluid P, who gleefully bends every rule they come up against, and wealthy distant Laura, who is tired of servants doing everything for her, from folding her clothes to pushing her wheelchair. But Henna's search for the fabled healing seed means she doesn't have time for friends, or so she thinks. This tender tale, blossoming with moments of joy, is a story of hope, grief, and learning to flourish with a little help from those around you. Now I'm really curious if it's St. Basil's or St. Basil's. I feel like St. Basil's sounds right, but if it's a seed, like a botanical boarding school, it makes sense it would be Basil. Although maybe in other places, Basil is pronounced Basil in other places. Who knows?
See, this is where movie adaptations come in handy, because you finally get an answer for how to say that one name you keep mispronouncing.
I'm also curious sometimes if audiobooks, if they pronounce things correctly, because I know sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But you would assume that they would. I know I was recently reading The Last Mapmaker with my mom and my niece. So we were reading it together over Zoom. But occasionally they could meet on Zoom and I couldn't. And so I would have to catch up. So I was listening to the audiobook to catch up. Mm-hmm. And the way that the audiobook pronounced certain names was different than how they did.
Oh,
so
no.
It really threw me if it was ever my turn to read, I felt like I needed to pronounce it the way that they pronounced it. I was like, but in my head, it's this other way. So that was very confusing. But either way, St. Basil's or St. Basil's. I think Basil sounds better.
Yeah.
Go with that, but you do you, you know? All right. I'll just share another one that's coming out. This one's a graphic novel, middle grade graphic novel. And it's a retelling of Beowulf. It's called Beowulf, like B-E-A, like the girl's name. And it's by Zach Wienersmith and Boulay. Let's see. Here's the description. Listen, hear a tale of mallow munchers and warriors who answer Candy's clarion call. Somewhere in a generic suburb stands Treeheart, a kid-forged sanctuary where generations of tireless tykes have spent their youths making merry, spilling soda, and staving off the shadow of adulthood. One day, these brave warriors find their fun cut short by the nefarious neighbor Grindel, who can no longer tolerate the sounds of mirth seeping into his joyless adult life. As the guardian of gloom lays siege to Treeheart, scores of kids suddenly find themselves transformed into pimply teenagers and sullen adults. The survivors of the onslaught cry out for a savior, a warrior whose will is unbreakable and whose appetite for mischief is unbounded. They call for Beowulf. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, I love retellings of like myths. I love that so much.
Yeah, I'm really curious about this one. I've heard really good reviews. The funny thing is I actually don't know Beowulf. I've never read it. I've never read an adaptation of it. So I know very little. So I'm curious. I feel like I would have to maybe read sort of a summary of it before diving in.
I think it would be interesting for you to read this blind and then read a summary of Beowulf to see how it differs.
Yeah, I could do that.